From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And good morning and welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show, where it is 10 o'clock in Arizona, 10 o'clock in the morning, and on the East Coast, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I hope everybody had a very enjoyable and safe 4th of July. I hope those folks that were in the heat, that are not used to the heat like we are in Arizona, survived it well. And hopefully it'll break for you, because I know it's going to be opposite of that for us, because it's only going to hang, the heat hangs here for a long time during the summer. I just wanted to mention that, as the intro said, that we're coming to you live from the offices of the Feeding Arizona. Well, we're no longer there. The Feeding Arizona offices are in the process of being moved, or they have been moved, as has the Valley View Community Food Bank. Jesse Martinez, the director and founder of the food bank, has managed to find an absolutely phenomenal location. And that phenomenal location is when what used to be a Safeway Superstore. He's got 36 or 38,000 square feet of food, offices, pantry, and thrift store. So if anybody is of a mind to help an absolutely outstanding food bank, please give Jesse a call. Get hold of him through valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. If you have needs skills that he might be able to use, such as your volunteer skills, if you want to make a donation of food or money, please let them know. They have plenty of room and plenty of need for plenty of help. So please contact them if you're interested in helping out a really well-done food bank, 501c3, and the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. He never charges for food boxes, which is amazing. And this is the Boomer the Babe Show, and we are broadcasting from our temporary offices in Sun City, Arizona, while our new location is being built in that food bank. So we're looking forward to getting there in maybe another 6 weeks or so. And we're going to continue with the same types of shows we've had right along while we're in this interim position. And today is no exception. We have a phenomenal lady on the show with us today. She is a baby boomer expert. She is a baby boomer, has written about the baby boom generation. Her name is Kate Forgash. And welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show, Kate Forgash.
Yeah. Happy to be here, Pete. Thanks.
Well, we're glad to have you, believe me. And we always start our shows with our guests. If Deborah was here, she would ask you for your two-minute movie. So what that means is tell us anything you want to tell us about yourself that you feel comfortable telling us in about 2 minutes.
I'm comfortable talking just about anything because I'm an old-school journalist. I grew up in Detroit as a reporter covering arts entertainment. And then I went to Cooperative Extension and became a baby boomer specialist, a consumer specialist, and took a couple years off to go travel Europe and become a travel writer and just enjoyed the heck out of myself. I was in Eastern and Western Europe and the United Kingdom, and then I took a jog down south to visit some friends in the United Arab Emirates and also visited Oman while I was there, and boy, was that an interesting experience. I'm back now in Colorado, my home, and am happy to say that I work for a company called Cannoli Inc. that's an affiliate marketing company. In other words, we have websites like Coupon Sherpa and Gift Card Granny and freeshipping.org that all provide ways for you to live more frugally.
I would imagine that the frugal living portion, as far as travel, is something that you could speak to. What is it, or do you have anything there at Cannoli that can help a traveler?
Well, you know, the big thing that I used while I was over there and the thing that connected me up to Cannoli was Gift Card Granny. That's where you can buy gift cards at a discount and off the face value of the card. You can get up to 50% off on the card, and you can use that for airlines, hotels, car rental agencies. You can do this both in the United States and in Europe because there's an app that allows you to do it on site.
So this this gift card actually is something that is going to be on your smartphone. Is that correct?
Right. The way it works is that you search for a gift card that you want to buy. You plug in your purchase information, your credit card, et cetera, and then it pops up a little gift card with a barcode. And when you go to buy something, they scan that barcode.
So you can stand right there at the counter, wherever it is, and say, this is what I'm buying, and so on and so forth. It comes up on your smartphone, they scan it, and you get your discount.
Right. Well, you get the discount when you buy the card.
Oh, when
then
you buy
the
card.
Then you use the gift card just as you would any gift card.
Oh, okay. So how much is the discount on the card?
It can be anywhere from 5% to 50%. It just depends on what the market is like at that moment. These are from resellers who buy gift cards in bulk, and they buy them from people. For example, if you bought a gift card and you decided you couldn't use it, or Aunt Alice gave you a gift card for something that you would never use, you can go to this website and sell it to one of the resellers. They'll give you a fair amount of what the face value is on the card.
So if I have a $100 gift card that I can only use at the reptile sanctuary in Bogota, Colombia, and I have no intention of ever going to Bogota, Colombia, I can go to Canoli and sell that gift card at a discount off the $100?
Well, that might be a hard sell. I don't think too many people would be doing that. But if you had a card for budget car rental, you'd have a very good chance of getting a high figure on that. And it's you go directly to a website called giftcardgranny.com to do that.
So you go to the giftcardgranny.com, you tell them what you have, then they make an offer to purchase it. Is that the way that works?
That's how it works, yeah. And you get several bids on it, usually.
Okay. And then at what point and how do you redeem that? You accept one of the offers, and how do you get your cash or whatever?
There's two ways. Either they'll send you a check or they'll refund the money to your credit card.
To your credit card, okay.
Right.
Very good. Now, is there any – there's obviously then no stipulation on where that card had to be purchased or who gave it to you. There's no stipulations on its origin as far as gift card granted.
None at all. No, you can have purchased it any way you want. You could have purchased it from Gift Card Granny, decided you didn't need it, and resell it all in the same place.
Okay, now, there's these stories that you hear on television and probably some on the radio and whatever, on the Internet certainly, and these blogs or people have written about how sometimes these gift cards have fees attached to them, or they have expiration dates, which you may or may not realize for whatever number of reasons you may or may not realize them. Is that anything like that applying to Gift Card Granny?
The only time those are apply are when they are credit card gift cards, for example, from American Express or Visa or MasterCard. There was a legislation called the CARD Act that passed a few years ago that doesn't allow for any of that hanky-panky anymore.
So now if somebody goes in, they go to Bank America, and they buy a cash card for somebody or a gift card for somebody that is cash for $100, and they give that as a gift, there's no way that that's going to expire, or is there?
For the cash cards, there are some allowance for expiration dates and charges. Unfortunately, the CARD Act didn't cover that. But any store or service gift card, they're not allowed to do that.
So the one that you buy off the rack at the grocery store that's for Chili's restaurant, and you go and you activate it at the cashier for $50, there's no problem with that expiring or having extra charges or anything?
Not anymore.
Wonderful. That's great.
Yeah.
That's nice to know. That's nice to know. And I would imagine that you used your gift card granny cards when you were traveling Europe and...
Well, the Gift Card Granny didn't exist when I traveled Europe, but when I've traveled the United States, I've used them. Particularly, just last week, I went to visit my brother in Idaho, and I rented a car because it turns out it's actually better for you to rent a car than to use your own car. The wear and tear on the car isn't worth it, and you can get the rental car for cheaper. So I got a budget rental gift card, and then I also got a Chevron gift card, and I used those two on my trip.
So let's talk about those two cards, if you don't mind. You bought yourself a budget rental card. How much did you pay for it, and what was its value?
Its face value was $100, and I paid $85.
Wow, that's not a bad discount, 15%. And how about how about the Chevron card?
Chevron was a really good deal. I bought a $200 card, and I paid about $155.
Wow, that's really good. I mean, it's almost worth your while to start throwing cash at gift card granny because you're getting your gas cheaper and whatever else.
Well, you know, it's not just for stores and these services. You can also buy it for groceries. All of your, like you were saying about Safeway, the old Safeway store, Safeway has a gift cards program, and you can buy those online. Or you can buy it on your smartphone and use the app right in the store. If you find out that you're going to be buying more groceries than you anticipated, you can go right on with your app and buy it right then.
So I'm going to go this afternoon. This is very legitimate what I'm telling you. I'm going to go this afternoon to go to the grocery store. We're going to lay in some vids for this household this afternoon, and I think we've got $200 set aside to go out and put some groceries in the house and restock the refrigerator and whatever. So what we really should do is go to Gift Card Granny and see what it would cost us, or see if we wanted to, let's put it this way, if I wanted to spend that $200 in its entirety, I can see what I would actually get face value at Gift Card Granny for Kroger's.
Because
where we're going is a Kroger owned by Kroger's.
If there are Kroger cards available, it'll show you what the best deals are.
Wow. Now, will that Kroger card, excuse me, as an example, will it say for meat, for dairy products, for deli, whatever? I mean, do they break it up like that, or is it anything in the store?
No, it's at the cash register. It's taken off, so it works for anything.
So it's across the board, anything that's in that store. That is phenomenal.
And if you were to buy a $200 gift card, or several gift cards adding up to $100, you don't have to use all that in one purchase. You could come back and use the rest of it another time, just like a gift card.
Like any other gift card.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is great. I'm glad you – having you on the show is worth it just for that information. That is unbelievable. I didn't realize that kind of discounting process was available out there. Now, I don't know. Maybe I've been under a rock.
While we're on the topic of groceries, let me just mention that Coupon Sherpa site I said at the top of the show. You can also use an app for couponsherpa.com. Sherpa is in the Tibetan tour leader. Couponsherpa.com, and you download the app, and you can download grocery coupons to your loyalty card, that little card, say, that's for Kroger that you give to the cashier at checkout. And it will download, once you input your loyalty card number into the app, it'll download those coupons that you want to use directly to the app. And then when you hand your loyalty card to the cashier, it'll automatically deduct that.
And, of course, those are for all nationally known products and easily recognizable by name and brand and so on and so forth.
Right, right. It'll vary. There's some that aren't available, and you won't get anything on produce or specifics like that. These are all main brand products.
Right, so if Kroger has their own brand, for instance, we buy Kroger mayonnaise, okay? So, but, I mean, the Kroger mayonnaise wouldn't be on here, but the Heilman's might be.
Right.
Okay, I got you. All right, that's really still very cool. Cause, you know, I mean, you can get the name brand stuff quite possibly for what you're paying for the store brand.
Right, right.
If the name brand means that much to you, obviously. You know, some people it doesn't matter, and obviously it matters to some enough that it's worth their while, that's for sure.
Well, there's gift coupons that are like get buy two, get one free, that you would actually save more off the name, the store brand.
Wow. Unbelievable. This is, I mean, I will be going on that website when this program is over. It's been nice having you as a guest. It was nice talking.
Thank you.
I will be going to that website, as a matter of fact, this afternoon and taking a look at that and seeing what it's all about. That's very, very interesting to me. I really think that's cool. And all the cards, of course, are on there, and you can be able to readily see what the values are and what the discounts are and so on and so forth, and you just have to click on it to see what it is.
Right.
Wow, very good. Let's talk about, now that we know how it is that you would travel nowadays and get away with paying less than the average bear, so to speak, let's talk about some of your travels through France and Europe and so on and so forth. What were some of the things that you wrote about that you found most interesting on your journeys?
Well, you know, my favorite story has nothing to do with saving money, but I just love to tell this story. It was in Abu Dhabi and in the United Arab Emirates, and it is a Muslim country, but it's a very loosely defined Muslim country. I was respectful in that I wore longer sleeves and long skirts, didn't wear shorts, but otherwise I really wasn't constrained. Until one day when I was going to do I was doing my laundry and I was down to my last set of undies and the elastic wasn't quite all that it should be. I got out to the center meridian of a large highway and suddenly felt a little tickle around my waist and felt those undies starting to work their way down my leg. And there are not public restrooms in stores for women. So I had to waddle my way back and forth to the store and back across the highway. And at the very end, just as I'm reaching the curb, I feel them entirely give way and bag around my ankles. So I just walked right out of them and left.
I imagine. I could just imagine. The look of chagrin if somebody was coming by, especially probably from either gender, and said, "What is going on here?"
This woman has the strangest gait I've ever seen.
Yeah. Must be that American woman.
Yeah.
So how did you find the Arab Emirates? I mean, was it something that is? I mean, you see the pictures of it, you hear the stories of it, and the golfers go over there, and they play in these big money tournaments, and it looks like it's just a phenomenal place, but would it be a phenomenal place to live? I mean, is it a place where an American citizen could go over there and enjoy a lifestyle that would not be too taxing in any other way?
It would be not that difficult because there's quite a few English-speaking people there. In fact, the friends I was visiting in Abu Dhabi belonged to a British club that had a pool and a beach and a library and all kinds of other facilities, and it allowed you to have outlets that you wouldn't normally have in other places. If you want to buy a bottle of wine, for example, you have to have your own personal license, and you have to go through a process to buy that because the Muslim religion doesn't allow for liquor. Although I would have to say that family of the rulers had a little looser rules on that for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They party quite a bit. I didn't find it constricting either in how people treated me. In fact, they were very welcoming. A gentleman would come up to me on the street and say, "Welcome," and "Where are you from?" and just be generally interested, but very polite, because they don't have an opportunity to talk to women otherwise than those that are in their family. And one of my favorite stories is when I was at the post office. I had purchased some gifts for girlfriends back home, some beautiful material from the souks, is what they call them, the markets, had them made into scarves, and bundled them up in a box and took them down to the post office. I was at the end of a very long line, and the gentleman behind the counter said, "Woman, here." I looked around, and I was the only woman that I could see. So I made my way up to the counter, and he was very friendly, wanted to know where I was from, et cetera. And then he handed me off to a friend of his further down the counter who reboxed my entire package to make it lighter, and it had a little eagle on it, as FedEx does, and he colored in the eyeball on the eagle to make it red-eyed, and he chatted with me for perhaps 15, 20 minutes. And so whenever I went back to the post office for further packages, I would just go directly to him, and he was so nice.
Were you traveling in the Emirates and Oman? Were you traveling as a single woman?
Yes, I was. But I was visiting some friends. So I was out there alone quite a bit, just shopping and seeing the sights, because they were working. They were teachers. But I also had their guidance as to how to handle things. For example, the cabs are very unusual. It's very inexpensive. They don't have public transport. But the cabs are like 50 cents for a ride across town. The problem is that there is no address for things. They may have a number on a building, but the cabbies pay no attention to that. So you would have to say Bank of America backside the name of the street and know exactly the destination. Now, the trick here is that Bank of America may now be Capital Access, and they would still call it Bank of America because historically that's what it was. In addition, the cabs are owned by the descendants of the founders of Abu Dhabi, and these families have an iron control on the cabs and government jobs, etc. They would hire people from outside the country who would come in and not necessarily speak English, and maybe their Arabic wasn't all that good, and they would take over the cabs as drivers, leasing them from the owners, and they would have to learn the routes slowly. Well, because their English wasn't so good, you'd have to learn the Arabic whenever there was an influx of new cab drivers, because every couple years they kick everybody out from those countries so they don't get too comfortable, and they bring in a new group of foreigners. So I learned this trick that when you are looking at a cab and you stop to tell him where you want to go, you look in the window and you see how heavily decorated the cab is. If it has a lot of fur on the dashboard and things dangling from the rearview mirror, that means they've been driving for quite a while, so they know where they're going. If the cab is barren, then they don't know where they're going, and you don't want to take that cab. I had one cabbie try to talk me into marrying him, in fact, because he wanted to get American citizenship. He was brand new to the area.
Is there a lot of that that goes on?
I would assume so. I was told by my friends that it's not unusual. I was just friendly and told him to let me out right here, and he did. And I just took another cab after that.
Sure.
You know, the problem with working, however, in the United Arab Emirates is that you work at the pleasure of the government. You have to get a contract with your employer, and unless it's an American employer, those contracts can be broken in any way that they like. They may get you there and say that they will pay a certain rate and then decide, no, they're not going to. So you have to be very careful.
How long ago was it that you were there traveling?
10 years ago.
Well, how do you have any concept as to how it may have changed from then till now?
My friends are still over there, and they say it's not much different. Oman, however, where we traveled for a week, which is directly south of the UAE, is a little more tense than it was at that time. It's much more traditional, and women aren't supposed to look at the men when they speak to them, that kind of thing. So I wouldn't travel to Oman right now, even though it's a beautiful region.
How many American companies would you guess are over there?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's like 100. There's some small government organizations, the nonprofits and things like that, and the embassies. But then, and so I would count those in it. but there's also some publications that are designed specifically for travelers, like I can't remember the name of the magazine. And then there's oil companies. There's a girlfriend of mine worked over there for a company that seeded the clouds to try to make it rain.
Uh-huh.
That was an atmospheric science company. And she went over there specifically working for the American company and really enjoyed it. So there's quite a variety. There's the banks and the usual companies. And the Americans are welcomed in quite nicely.
So as an American traveling to the United Arab Emirates, you can be relatively assured that whatever your needs are is going to be handled by an American company if you choose to do that. Is that a correct statement?
No, I wouldn't say that entirely. You're dependent on their grocery stores and their clothing stores. There may be a Macy's over there as well as other clothing stores, but you're not going to get as good a deal as you would with the smaller merchants or in the souks, the little markets.
Because they're what? They're willing to negotiate?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Bartering is a big thing.
Really?
I bought a prayer rug and wasn't comfortable bartering, and this gentleman from France heard me trying to barter, and he stepped in and said, "Would you mind if I helped you?" He was half Arab, and he got the price down to half of what it originally was for me. We ended up going out to a disco that night.
If you can, give me a scenario as to what a barter situation might look like, or feel like, or sound like, or whatever.
It's exactly what you would think. You ask them what the price is, because there are no price tags, unless it's in a mall situation, and they will tell you their price, and you say, "Oh, no, I couldn't possibly pay that," and you might start walking away. And they'll say, "Oh, no, for you, special deal. I give you such and such a rate." And you'd say, no, that's still too much. I'm not interested. I've seen that for cheaper elsewhere." They come down with another price then, and you just keep going back and forth that way. The trick is you have to be willing to walk away, to sincerely walk away from that purchase and give it up if they won't come down to a reasonable price or the price that you want.
It's interesting. You mentioned barter, and I don't know—is it barter or is it negotiation? I don't know which it really is. I always thought of barter as being trade. I'll trade you what I have for what you have, and it's not money. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they consider it bartering.
They do. Well, that's fine. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that's what I always considered. And I remember one of the times when we used to live in San Diego, we went to Tijuana, and we got involved in buying some turquoise jewelry. And we argued or hassled or haggled or whatever you want. I bartered, discussed, whatever you want to say. And we finally got it down to where we wanted to have it. And we were very pleased, and we took our turquoise jewelry and we came home with it. And then upon further review, we realized that what we had been bargaining for and haggling for was plastic.
Oh dear.
And I went, "Oh my gosh." And no wonder they came down so quickly and so willingly.
have to know what you're buying. That's true.
I know.
While you're doing the barter, you examine the product very closely.
I thought we were, but I mean, you know, we were wet behind the ears. We had just gotten down to San Diego, and we had just, you know, one of the first times we were ever there, and we said, "Oh, wow, isn't this wonderful, Tijuana? Look at the deals we're getting." And I tell you, and it turns out that it was plastic. Then it turns out that I found out how you tell. And it's like a pearl, by what I've been told, is that you take the stone and you rub it on your teeth. If it is gritty, then it's genuine. If it is smooth, it is synthetic. And the same is for a pearl.
I've heard that.
Apparently. It doesn't matter whether it's a natural pearl or a cultured pearl. It's still a pearl. But if it's not a real pearl, if it's a plastic replica, it'll be smooth as you rub it across your front teeth. And I went, wow, isn't that nice? I wish I'd have known that. I'd have started to put it in my mouth, the guy would have grabbed my wrist. No, senor. No. So it sounds as though you had quite an enjoyable time and quite an adventurous time when you were traveling in the United Arab Emirates and also around Europe. How many parts of Europe did you see?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably 15 to 20 countries.
Wow.
I traveled quite a bit, and I did it very inexpensively because travel writing doesn't pay all that well. I found a few different ways. One of my favorite things was hostels. Yeah, I can't stress strongly enough how much cheaper and more enjoyable it is to stay in a hostel because, first of all, you get a good rate, and you get often access to internet and phones and a free breakfast that sometimes can be stretched into a lunch if you have Tupperware with you or a baggie. And you also, best of all, get to meet other travelers. Many of them will speak English, and they tend to be younger, but there's also seniors who like to use hostels. In addition, you'll often find that they have rooms for two or for four family rooms. Some of them have private baths, but more often you have to share the bathroom. And these are very inexpensive compared to what a hotel room would cost you. The other way that I found to travel inexpensively and stay overnight was by meeting people. First of all, I asked all my friends in America if they could recommend that I visit someone, and that's what I did in England, for example. I stayed in London for a couple of weeks with a friend of a friend. But I also, for example, met a girl in Italy who was traveling on a bus, and we talked the whole time and got along great. She was from Poland, so I went to Krakow to visit her, and they're very friendly. Many of them want you to stay for quite a while. So there were various countries. Estonia was another favorite of mine, where I stayed for a couple weeks, was welcomed into the family, learned much more about the culture as a result, and paid perhaps a dinner out and buying some groceries. They're very specific that they didn't really want me to pay for too much. As much as we are in America, we're very welcoming. But it's surprising how much they'll welcome you into their home.
You mentioned hostels. Now, back in the day when I was younger, I heard they're called youth hostels. Is this still the same thing?
They used to call them youth or elder hostels, depending, but they've kind of meshed these days. They're both. You can find out more about the hostel that you specifically are interested in by going to Lonely Planet and Hostel World, two different websites, and you can search by location and price and the type of the hostel so you know what type of people stay there. They'll usually include photos and a description of the accommodations, so you can actually see what you're getting into. And that'll give you more of an idea of what's going on. If it's a hostel that just has bunk beds in a large room, then it's likely going to be a younger hostel. But if they have private rooms, then it's going to include some elders as well. I personally never found a problem sticking around with the kids because they were so anxious to talk about America and share the language with me.
What was a typical cost for something like that you were staying where you were staying?
Some of them were as cheap as $20, depending on the place, and some went up to about $40 or $50. When I stayed in Berlin, it was $40, for example, per night, but that included very lush breakfast that I was able to stretch into lunch by, as I said before, making my own sandwich and slipping it into a baggie. They didn't have a problem with that. It also had excellent security, which is something you want to look for. They had an internet connection that was free. They had a bank of phone phones, which was before cell phones were that popular. They just had a lot of amenities, and they were so helpful at explaining how to get around town. They had a concierge, and you don't find that too often. So it was worth paying the extra price for.
Is the is the hostels today and the travel today changed significantly, do you feel, or do you know, as far as Europe is concerned, with all the concerns for security and so on and so forth? I just would think that it has, but I have no way of knowing.
I think the big change is in cost, because Europe has gone so sky high with the euro that it's going to cost you more in a hostel. But on the other hand, it's also going to cost you more in a hotel. So it's a matter of setting aside exactly how much money you think you can afford. You can make a reservation for a hostel on Lonely Planet and Hostel World, so you know exactly how much you're going to be paying. And there are other tricks to keep your costs down. Restaurants are going to be a big chunk of your expense. So there's some ways to get around having to eat in restaurants.
Well, what are some of those food tricks that that you're obviously aware of?
Well, my favorite was to shop local markets. It was a great way to interact with the residents and the people who worked behind the counter to learn about new foods and how to prepare them, because many hostels offer kitchen services. And it's amazing how easy it is to talk about food when you don't share a common language. It's much as the same as I found in Abu Dhabi talking with the women who didn't speak English. Just through sign language and various other means, you can talk to people in different countries without that much difficulty once you get your sea legs on the road. What I would do shopping local markets was also to buy salad makings or sandwich makings or, say, a bottle of asparagus spears and eat that on the train so that I didn't have to pay for train food. Buy a baguette and some cheese or whatever you want inside the baguette. Make your own train lunch and take it with you. Then the only meal that I ate out was dinner. And I sometimes would treat myself to something nice, but more often would grab a pizza piece or something like that.
So how often did you actually go out and treat yourself to a local meal fixed in a very nice or fancy restaurant? Did that happen very often? Or
no, I didn't go to fancy restaurants except when I was on a date. And because I was traveling single, I did meet quite a few gentlemen, and I would say gentlemen. The only place I had trouble was in Spain. Italian men don't pinch your butts and all that kind of thing like you hear. They were actually very nice.
Oh, that just ruined my whole.
No, it's the Spanish men who are trouble for a single woman, even an older woman.
I have indeed heard that Spain was... I don't know, they all think they're swashbuckling bullfighters or something.
I guess. I don't know. And they take their marriage vows very lightly.
A little bit
like the French, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They'll flirt with you right in front of their wife and children.
Wow. what about the women? Will the women flirt with men in front of their husbands?
I couldn't tell you. I never noticed that. I was so desperate trying to get away from the gentleman. I liked a lot about Spain, but that caused a real problem for a single woman traveling. I would say that you're best off traveling in pairs in Spain. Mm-hmm. But that's just my prejudice.
Two single women causing double
yes.
trouble.
Yes, right. Yeah. Otherwise, I had no problem traveling alone. I had to be careful when I would chat up with men.
Sure.
But any woman can be discriminating who's baby boomer age. We know what we're looking for.
Absolutely, absolutely.
One of the advantages of eating in Spain, however, was tapas meals. Often those come free with a sangria order during happy hour. So you can have a whole dinner of tapas. You know, they're not going to be the best possible food, but it's quite inexpensive, and you get a sangria pitcher along with it.
Explain, what is tapas?
Tapas are little individual appetizers.
It's sort of like poo-poo platters in Hawaii.
I guess. I've never been to Hawaii. That's one of the states I haven't visited, that in Alaska.
At any rate, you mentioned earlier transportation, and you've mentioned trains, and I think you mentioned buses.
Oh, I love trains in Europe. Not only a cheap way to travel, but it's also a great way to meet new people. As you can tell, I'm pretty gregarious. Mm-hmm. I found any opportunity to talk to local people and it really immerse myself in the culture. I always feel bad for Americans who travel over there, stay in American hotels, eat at American type of restaurants, and don't really see what's going on in the country. Those are the people who come home thinking French waiters are rude, rather than understanding that their culture is that you leave the people alone table. You don't hasten them through the food so that they can turn a top and get a new tip, because they're not working for tips. They'll get you your water if you signal it, but the French aren't big on drinking water. And so you might have trouble getting your check at the end, but they don't understand when you just make a check sign in the air, because you're supposed to say l'addition, s'il vous plaît, addition, instead of saying waiter, garçon. Actually, never say garçon. Garçon means boy as a slang. Instead, they prefer that you say l'addition, s'il vous plaît. But the trains, I got off track there, didn't I? Train travel allows you to meet people, but if you buy your ticket via Eurorail in America, you get a cheaper price as well. And if you're over there for any extended period of time, you can go through a travel agent in America and they'll ship you the ticket. So it's important to establish a relationship with a travel agent before you go.
Because you can always have that thing and get the American rates.
Right. And a travel agent is just invaluable. When I traveled to the UAE, I tried to do it on the Internet. It was just impossible. So I emailed my travel agent and said, help, and she made the arrangements, and it turned out to be just as cheap.
So when you're doing all this traveling around Europe, you're taking trains and eating the local food and staying with the local people or in a hostel and using the local transportation. It sounds to me as though you are looked at or thought of almost as one of the Europeans themselves, at least at some level. Is that the case?
Well, you're considered to be road smart. You don't want to do certain things that Americans tend to do. You don't want to wear white tennis shoes and jeans and a T-shirt. In a lot of countries, because that makes you stick out immediately. You don't want to talk in a loud voice in most countries. Americans are very boisterous, and as a result, if young gentlemen traveling in crowds can be very noisy. You want to learn certain phrases that are important, like how much does a ticket cost, and how much does this cost specifically. You want to learn thank you and please and numbers and just basic phrases you would use each day. What I did was to keep a little notebook for each country and would write down the words that I need. Then before going into a place or before approaching a person, I would memorize what I had to say or even refer to it. But if you memorize it, sometimes they'll mistake you for a local if your accent is good enough. It's just a matter of being polite and being aware of their customs. I found a series of books on how to, what were the local cultures for different countries and how to approach the people, and found that to be really a big help, because then people were more helpful to me.
Did you have occasion to travel much in the Scandinavian countries?
I went to Switzerland. That was the only place. I had a girlfriend living in Switzerland and visited her and really enjoyed that. It was the German or the Italian portion of Switzerland.
You never got to Norway and Sweden and Finland and those areas?
No. I went to Amsterdam, and that's about as close.
Well, that's a shame. I'd love to have heard more about Finland, because that's where my ancestry is. I guess I'm just going to have to go do that myself.
Yes, yeah. I encourage everyone to get a passport and travel to another country, whether it be South America or Europe or an Arab country or even just Canada.
It's really amazing now with the needs and the requirements for passports. Maybe we can touch on that. I mean, I was raised in Detroit, and it used to be the case we'd go over the Ambassador Bridge, come back through the tunnel, you know, whatever. At the drop of a hat, we'd go to Canada. Didn't have to worry about a thing. Drive over, drive back. It really has changed, hasn't it, with the advent of all the security requirements?
Oh, yeah, it's gotten much more difficult. Just traveling within America on airplanes is difficult. That's one of the reasons I chose not to fly to Idaho to see my brother, and it actually turned out to be cheaper to rent a car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips or suggestions for people that are using the airlines? Are there certain things that you may have come across that would be a benefit?
Well, one thing I did was to not dress in a sweatsuit on the plane. I dressed nicely, comfortably. And as a result, I found that the, not stewardesses, I forget what they're called these days, flight attendants treated me nicer. And if I got a nice seatmate, I could often strike up a conversation. And sometimes they were from the country that I was about to visit, and that would lead to an invitation.
Otherwise,
for security purposes, you just have to follow the basic rules. Have a minimum of liquids in your carry-on. So because I couldn't get my favorite skincare products from Aveda, in Europe, I had to put them into my check luggage, wrap them severely in plastic, and keep those with me over there.
Now, why is it that you were not treated as well, or were treated differently if you were to wear a sweatsuit? What was the reason for that?
Because they tend to see you as just another American traveling bozo. The ugly American tendency is very true. If you dress up, they just see you as more travel wise, and you get treated better that way.
Let's talk a little bit about the ugly American. What areas of Europe is it more prevalent, or is it the same all over? And what do Americans do that offend people? In Europeans?
Well, the biggest one is to not learn some of the language, particularly in France. They're very proud of their language. And let me give you an example of a problem with that. A friend of mine was visiting from Colorado in Paris. I went up to visit her with her, and we were waiting outside the Louvre in line. And she was making very loud complaints about how long the line was and grabbing at people and asking them questions. In France, you never touch people. You give them the double kiss, but there's no hugging. There's no grabbing. It's just not polite. She was also talking very loud, and she would her southern accent suddenly became very broad and much more difficult to understand. And the most mortifying moment I felt was when we were a little bit turned around in Paris. Although I know Paris pretty well, we were on a street that I didn't quite know, and she grabbed a passerby and said, "Où est la Tour Eiffel?" meaning, "Where is the Eiffel Tower?" But that's not how you say it, and you don't grab the person. And the first thing that you do whenever you're speaking to someone in France is to say, "Bonjour, monsieur, bonjour, madame." You always say hello first, much as we would in America. You wouldn't grab someone on the street in America and just start talking to them. You'd say, "Excuse me, hello, I'm looking for this." You just are a little more polite. And that's one example. In Krakow, for another, I found that an American that was visiting with me would have a tendency to assume that the people were very poor, and she would leave very large tips in non-American restaurants. Now, if it's an American restaurant or Americanized restaurant, it's fine to leave a larger tip, but the Polish see us as throwing around our money, and they look down on that. So, like I said, it's important to understand the culture itself before you go. And there's no shortage of books that will help you out with that. Or if you know someone who's traveled there, ask them for tips. Or if you know someone who lives there, ask them for tips.
Yeah, that was my next question. How do you find out in advance of what's going to be offensive so you can make sure you stay away from it?
Well, travel guides are pretty good about that. I'm having a hard time with names today. There is a series of books by a gentleman named Steve something who does tell you quite a great deal about the culture itself and what you should see and how you should see it and how you should treat the people. Oh, what is this? He has a TV show. Anyway, it's important to just read up firsthand. It's not that you have to take those guides with you. You can actually get them on the internet, download them, just the portion that you actually want. So you don't have to read the entire book. You could just get the culture section of it.
If you could come up with, I don't know, maybe five is too much to give you a spur of the moment, I don't know, but 5 points of travel in Europe that people would definitely have to heed and be wary of, what might they be?
Well, one is plastic safety. You should notify all your credit card companies you're planning on traveling outside the United States. Otherwise, they might place a hold on your account for unusual activity, particularly if you're going to spend a large amount of money, say, in a hotel. That kind of gives a flag, and you're going to spend a lot of time on the phone trying to unravel that. Plus, credit cards often offer extra insurance for example, if you're renting a car, it provides you with insurance on that card. Another plastic safety factor is that you should note your credit or debit card numbers and the foreign contact phone numbers for those companies. Then keep that information in a separate and safe place from the cards. I stored mine in an email account, my Hotmail account, with a bogus subject line so that anybody hacking into my account wouldn't know what that was. And that way, someone who raided my hotel room wouldn't find the information. And it became a real help when I lost one of my credit cards. It was stolen. Never exchange money at the airport. That's where you'll pay the highest rate possible. Instead, look for an airport ATM and take out the maximum amount. Excuse me, usually around $200. You'll pay a fee, but not nearly as high as the airport exchange rate.
Let me ask you a question about that. You're in the airport in Munich, okay, and you want to get $200 out of the ATM. So you put in your card, just like you would in this country, I would imagine, and you get $200. Now, do you get the German equivalent of $200 in euros, or do
yes.
you get $200 American cash?
Yes, it's in that country's figure.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's much cheaper way to go than even to exchange in America.
Wow. So just go over there with your plastic.
Right.
Well, I mean, it seems like it's a logical thing to do.
You might want to get a minimum about, say, $50 worth before you leave the United States, if you can, just to cover possible costs on the airplane if you're traveling on a foreign airline.
Mm-hmm. What was
to
next?
Tip
I interrupted you. You had another one you were just about ready to...
Also, you might want some cash to tip the bellhop or whatever you want to call them in the airport.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you can give us as far as travel tips or top five, if you will?
I would strongly recommend making your reservations for hostel or hotel before you go over there. And you can change that reservation, especially with hostels. You can change them without any problem if something else should arise. But at busy times particularly, it's going to be difficult to get a reservation at the last minute. I got stuck in Amsterdam my first day because I hadn't made a reservation thinking that it would be very easy to get a room. And boy, it wasn't. So I ended up staying in a high-rise American hotel for a night, and that cost me about what I would have spent on the hostel for the entire week.
Well, I thought maybe you were going to say you were sleeping on a park bench or something.
Well, there's one night I did sleep on a bench in a train station because there was a strike on French trains, and I was coming out of Spain, so maybe a rule was to bring a blanket because, oh, did I freeze. It was so cold.
Amazing. Well, it sounds like you've had some great adventures, and you have some probably more good memories than bad about all your traveling.
Oh, definitely, and I plan on going back. My next goal is to live in Italy.
Oh, really? As a full-time place, or just go back like for one summer or something like that?
No, I'd like to live for a couple years. My goal is to find a job that I can do from anywhere in the world.
Wow, very nice. Well, that's not, obviously it sounds like an internet job to me.
Yep, definitely. And I'm a writer, so as long as I can write, I can make a living.
Well, you should be writing for Huffington Post.
They don't pay their bloggers.
That's what I understand. we've had several people on that said, yeah, well, I write for Huffington Post. I said, oh, really cool. They said, yeah, but I don't make any money. Well, we're right down here to the short rows. It's amazing that we had this hour fly by so fast, Kate. Are there any closing thoughts that you'd like to give us with regard to anything that you're doing now or how people can get in touch with you or involved with you if they have questions, if you do that type of thing? So here's your chance for a shameless self-promotion if you choose to take it.
Well, I don't think I would promote myself, but I would say definitely it's worth checking in with Cannoli Inc. And to see all their websites, you simply go to thefrugals.com. It's a family of websites, so you can visit any of those through the Frugals and save on a number of other things we haven't discussed.
Well, I tell you, this has been a lot of fun talking to you and learning more about traveling in Europe and particularly the United Arab Emirates. I think that would be just very exciting and very very enlightening to be over there and to see all the stuff that's going on. So I thank you for taking the time. And I look forward to you sending us a little blog piece for our online magazine as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's been my pleasure, Pete. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure indeed. So thanks again for being with us, and have a great afternoon and the rest of the week, and enjoy any future travels.
You too. Take care.
Thanks again. And this has been the Boomer the Babe Show, another edition. We've been talking today with Kate Forgash about traveling in Europe and the United Arab Emirates and all of her experiences and some tips to do the same. So we're very pleased that she was able to make it with us. In the event that you're interested in more that the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated does, go to boomerandthebabe.com. Check us out. Don't forget to see our other archives and our on-demand programs on blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Remember that we try to bring the good conversation to you and to the world whenever we have our guests, and we have a whole bunch of them sitting there on our Blog Talk on-demand segments. Our people that have written e-books with us and that we've published their e-books also have their own shows on our Boomer the Babe Network, and those are up on the on-demand section on the Blog Talk site as well. So thanks again for listening. Have a great day, everybody. Make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And we'll see you again probably tomorrow, I hope, for another show. As long as I get my confirmation from my prospective guests, we'll be on the air. Thanks again, and have a great day. Bye now.
You've been listening to
to the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.